Hello and welcome to the Molotov Podcast. We will be starting momentarily. Those who decide to take their work to the next level. They devote all their time to make sure that they are the best in the world, and they don't stop practicing no matter the situation. This is what separates a common competitor and a professional. Through thick and thin, these players risk it all to become the best CSGO players, and some even cheat to try to take the easy way out, and even though their examples should not be followed, it is an inspiring act of devotion whenever this happens. Hello, my name is Blair Wang, and I am your host on Molotov. Today, we will be covering some of the hottest topics in the history of CSGO. We'll be covering what the CSGO professional competitive scene is and how it works, the Ninjas in Pimp Pajamas 87-0 run, the iBuyPower match fixing scandal, the rise and fall of the French CSGO scene, Astralis' double major in number one reign, FaZe super team and why it failed, and the rise and fall of Cloud9. So first and foremost, we need to discuss the professional scene in its glory, and we need to go over how it works and how teams can use their players to climb and be the best in the world. So in every team, there are five players, and sometimes there are players on the bench who sub in for people that are injured or have some sort of family issue or are ill or any sort of break, I guess, like that. And in most teams that are very wealthy, they would have a management team and an owner and a president who basically controls all the money within this sort of ecosystem of a team. And similar to sports, due to stress, so many things are necessary in an esports team, like a welfare team, psychologist, stuff like that. And it is very common to see things that you would generally see in sports for teams be applied to esports teams. Now, these players are chosen through scouting, which basically means that through either tryouts or broadcasts where players would stream their skills and show people their utmost ability, as in the people who recruit players for Counter-Strike teams, would take a look at these recordings and take a look at these sort of tryouts, I guess you could say, and they would choose the people who they think would fit the team best in terms of skill, teamwork, personality, and anything basically that would benefit the team. Now, in Counter-Strike tournaments, there are two types of tournaments. There is a major tournament, which happens twice every year, and minor tournaments, which aren't really necessarily like a designated number of them every year. There's not a designated number of them every year. They just kind of happen whenever and wherever. And a major tournament is basically a tournament that is sponsored by Valve, the company that made Counter-Strike, and is also basically like the official like best tournament, like where all the best teams go to play. And minors are where people can qualify for these majors tournaments by playing to get the top spot in one of these tournaments, they can qualify for these major tournaments. Now, in a major tournament, the format to play out is that you have three total stages. So the first stage is the challenger stage, where all the teams who have qualified through winning one minor are put into a match where if the top eight teams move on to the new legend stage, which is the next stage, and the bottom eight teams are eliminated. So most teams would have to win three matches to advance and lose three matches to be disqualified. And the eight that move on are put into the new challenger stage, which the new legend stage, sorry, and that is where all the teams that have qualified through getting a top eight spot in the previous major are put in. So they get to skip all of the challenger stages. And they play best of three matches, so not just one match to 16, but anywhere from like to they play up to three to see who wins two matches first. And it's kind of the same as the challenger stage, as in where you if you get three wins, you move on to the best of 16, or best of eight, sorry. And if you lose three matches, you're out of the tournament. So the top eight that move on are in the stage called the best of eight, which is the playoffs. And these teams play for the top spot in the major, where they can win up to $1 million. Now, these teams, whenever they play in a tournament and they finish that tournament, their ranking in the HLTV ranking system will change. So the way this works, the ranking works, is that you have to consider a team's position on the leaderboard, and if they win against a team that is higher than them on the leaderboard, then they will gain more points than if they win against someone who is below them on the leaderboard. And this corresponds to what position a person is on the leaderboard. And that means that if you're on the top of the leaderboard, it's going to be harder for you to get more points, whereas someone at the bottom of the leaderboard, if they win a match, then they are getting a lot of points. And losing is basically the same as winning, except vice versa. So if you lose against someone who is a lot higher than you on the leaderboard, you will lose less points. You will still always lose or gain points depending on how well you do in each of these matches, but the severity of these changes differ based on how much higher or lower a team is compared to a specific team. So if you lose to someone that is very, very, very below you, you will lose a lot of points, and you could potentially give up your spot to the person below you. In the beginning of the Counter-Strike scene, there was one team who has dominated every single tournament for a very prolonged period of almost 2 years. The Swedish team Ninjas in Pajamas was often regarded as the past histories of CSGO's best roster for a specific era. Now, this roster has won a total of 87 specific matches on a LAN tournament, which means that they played a person side by side in person, and those two teams would see who would win, and they won 87 of those to win 10 tournaments. Now, to put this into perspective, when a player wins sorry, not a player. When a team wins a major, they need to win. They would play around 20 maps, and most of the time, they only win 75% of those maps. So, generally, a team would win 15 and lose maybe 5 or 4. Now, imagine doing that 10 times. Winning 10 times. And not only just winning 20 maps 10 times, you would have to win so that you didn't have to play these matches. So, you would win maybe 8, and then you would win the tournament. And you'd keep doing that until you win 87 matches. Now, the roster of Lecro, Dennis, Rez, Getright, and Forrest was possibly that time period's most decked roster that any team has ever seen. This roster had the best mechanical skill for its era. These five players had the best mechanical skill, and all of them could use any weapon, and any of them could call strats, any of them could tell the team what to do, and they would still be the best. That's how closely linked they are to the top. They were all the best players of their time. Now, this is important to note, because back then, that sort of idea was never discovered, and it was kind of dropped for a very extended period of time, but it has come back to people's attention nowadays, and it has shaped some of the most interesting rosters that CSGO has ever come to see. And these teams that are built around five very, very good players are becoming much more common nowadays. Now, another early event that happened in the Counter-Strike Global Offensive game's history that shaped one of the most interesting dramas in this game's history was the iBuyPower match-fixing scandal. iBuyPower was a North American team, specifically from the United States of America, with five very, very good players who were very ambitious. And these five players were Dazed, Swag, AZK, Steel, and Skadoodle. And this American team had the ambition to play against Europe's top teams and beat them. And at this time, this was something that was very rare within the North American CSGO scene, as the Europeans were always dominating the Counter-Strike scene with their mechanical ability and cohesiveness. Now, in a match that they definitely should have won in a very minor tournament, they lost terribly. And this sparked some confrontation from Richard Lewis, a journalist in the esports community, who made claims that the team of iBuyPower was throwing the game, so they were not trying and they were trying to lose in exchange for some sort of good. Now, this article had very little backbone and no one believed that it was true. But through a series of events, such as the article being confirmed by another North American player, Shazam, and the admission and evidence of this match-fixing scandal through a DuckCudFam, who was a CSGO Lounge employee, who tracked bets through this thing, this match, and basically, he found out that the owner of the team that they were playing, iBuyPower was playing, was contacting iBuyPower to try and make sure that they would win the next match, as it really didn't matter to any team. And he said that if they purposely lost that match, he would give them a bunch of in-game cosmetics costing up about $700 for those five players. Now, when Valve found out about this, they instantly banned seven people in coordination of this scandal from any Valve-sponsored events, which meant that four out of the five players on iBuyPower would not be able to play in major tournaments. Now, all these players, Dazed, Swag, AZK, Steel, and Skadoodle, were very promising players who would become to shape the future of the game. But as it turns out, after the banning of these four players, they have become very toxic figures within the community and very bitter and salty. It's not a very good thing to look back on what happened. Now, I say four players out of five, as Skadoodle was not banned, as the person who was giving out these cosmetics to all the players did not have the cosmetics for Skadoodle at the time, and Skadoodle was like, okay, whatever, fine, just bring them to me when you can. So he was still involved with the match fixing, but he did not accept any of those cosmetics in exchange for the loss, as when they were ready, he was just kind of like, whatever, it's whatever, it doesn't matter anymore. So it was not necessarily an act of integrity, but more as an act of luck and protection. And he sort of took that sort of play for granted, as everyone on this team just wanted to try something new. They wanted to experiment to see where this could take them. And from now on forwards, in every Valve-sponsored event and all the games that Valve made that are in the competitive scene, Valve has made sure that this sort of treatment of the game, including hacking, cheating, spying, anything like that, was not a part of the game. And they wanted to make sure that any person who was involved in that sort of play would instantly be punished, to make sure that this sort of action would not perform any repercussions and it would not turn up in the future. And since then, in CSGO, there has been a lot less scandals and dramas, and Skadoodle would become one of the best North American players in the world. Moving past the early days of Counter-Strike, we now see one country coming out with the best teams that Counter-Strike has ever seen: France. Now, the French CSGO scene was one of no other. They developed players who were so good at the game, with such high mobility and aim that collide together, where they can basically run around the map and get these eliminations without any effort. And they came out with some of the best players, such as Kenny S, a very good sniper who has been known to have the best reaction and aim duo in a single person for a sniper, and was considered the best sniper for a very long time, and still is. Shox, a very high mechanical player who has been continued to be revered as the best player in the world. And most recently, a new player, Zywoo, who is Shox but more mobile and has is much younger and has a very long way to go in experience, so who knows where he could grow. Now, the French scene was like this for a very long time. They were at the peak of Counter-Strike Evolution, and they were playing at the best, and they were being looked up by every other nation in the world. But it all came crashing down. And no one knows why this happened, but when a French team, two French teams, G2 and Envious, switched their rosters around for the third time in hopes of winning another major tournament for their country. Something about the personalities of G2 and just the technical skill of Envious just could not keep up with the demands of other teams that came out of other countries such as America or Denmark or Russia. And the French CSGO scene started spiraling down ever since. And they have not made a major tournament top 8 for about 2 years now. And the players with such high mechanical skill still have a very high mechanical skill. But it kind of outlines a problem within teams where they now, they don't have the teamwork and they don't have the cooperation and the coagulation of their personalities to the point of other teams. And this includes Astralis. Now, Astralis is a Danish team with five superstars who made the 2018 top 10 players in the world on HLTV, which, if you remember, also ranks the best teams. And although these five players aren't the best, they're definitely nowhere near the top. These players definitely redefined the way that Counter-Strike was played. Instead of basing it off one superstar player, or even five superstar players who revolve around a specific play style, their adaptive play style to situations sparked a very deserved sort of hype surrounding their team. And the way that they play is not based off of mechanical skill or movement or utility use, which a lot of them all know how to do. But it is based off of teamwork. And some of these gimmicks that Astralis uses, like opening two doors at the same time to make it sound like only one door has been opened, or setting up utility usage in a way that will allow them to take an area together and then play on from there, was brilliant. And it allowed them to win two majors in a year, three consecutive majors, and they reigned as the number one team in Counter-Strike for almost 2 years. Now, this sort of play style has been developing through other such teams who are also at the top nowadays. One of them is Team Liquid, an American team, and another one is Ents, which didn't start out as a very serious team, but as the team saw how their players were progressing with their teammates, progressing through their skill, progressing through their anything else, they decided that they could become one of the best. And right now, these three teams, Liquid, Ents, and Astralis, are 1, 2, and 3 on the HLTV ranking. And it just goes to show how much history goes into the teamwork. As in, back when NIP was 87 and 0, they had five superstars. But back then, it wasn't really five superstars or a teamwork-based team. It was one or two even very good players and three or four other players to support them. What if back then teams were made to be cooperative and not just cooperative, but more cooperative and had more thinking going into it? What could have happened with an 87-0? It could have been 200-0. This sort of thinking back then would have changed the entire scene, and it has right now. And this kind of falls in to another topic, which is the FaZe Super Team. Now, FaZe Clan was not originally a super team, but they were, their organization was the team that defined what a super team was. One day, the organizers of FaZe Clan decided that they wanted to have five very, very big superstars on their team. And they decided to coin this sort of team the phrase super team. Now, when this came out, everyone was very hyped, everyone was excited, everyone wanted to see what they could do, and it started off very strong. The mechanical skill of these five players, which were Guardian, a very, very good sniper, probably the best in the world, Nico, the best player in the world, with game sense and aim, Olafmeister, a very, very good aimer and skillful player, Rain, a very tactical player, and Kerrigan, one of the most talented IGLs and game leaders in the game. Now, this FaZe Super Team did very well in the first year of their organization. They started off very strong with winning every minor, well, almost every minor that they competed in, and got second in their first major at Boston, losing in an upset where they were expected to win. This, however, started something that I like to call the Super Team slump. Now, the Super Team slump is when you have all these great players, but it just seems like you can't win. And although this might not always be the case in a super team, I feel like, this is my opinion, I feel like that super teams do not have the teamwork compared to that is necessary to play in such a game that other teams will have, as you're just picking five players that are just good. You don't know if they like each other. You don't know if they play well together. You don't know if how they play defines how they work well as a team. And you don't know how they're, how each player can contribute to the team in a way that will benefit them. One player might like to do this flashy sort of, like, peak where they just run out and they just get every kill. But once they die, they're leaving their players with only four players to do so. And every time that happens, a team who sets up good angles and good places to watch an area, you can't just keep running in like that. You need a strategy and you need to use your head. You can't just run in and keep doing that. Now, this is what caused FaZe's slump in their tournaments to start. They traded out Kerrigan for Adren, a very good Kazakhstani player, but they were still not winning anything. They did not make a finals in a major ever since Boston, and essentially, they pretty much died out completely because no one was paying attention to how their team was playing anymore, because it just wasn't interesting to watch all these frustrated players play so poorly. And they couldn't work together as a team from then on, and they kept losing, and they didn't get the very top placements that they were hoping for. They were still within the top 15 best teams in the world, but they were not at the level that these people expected them to be at with their star-studded roster. And I feel like this is a problem with super teams. And as NIP started the super team with the concept, I feel like nowadays it isn't viable, as everyone now is practicing and devoting their time to becoming a better mechanical player. Pure mechanical skill in a team is not enough to win anymore. Now, our last topic for today is probably one of the most intriguing stories that I've come across when I've been watching the pro scene in Counter-Strike, which is the rise and inconsistencies of the placements of the American team, Cloud9. As I said before, Cloud9 is an American-based team who has always seemed to struggle as a team in the world of Counter-Strike. When they started off, they were undoubtedly the best North American team in the world. They were always ahead of the game in North America. They were winning all the North American minors, and they were playing so well. However, when they were matched up against teams in Europe, such as Ninjas in Pajamas, or Astralis, or G2, they just couldn't keep up with them, and they just kept losing, and it was frustrating. Through multiple roster changes, they found a bunch of rosters that they liked. It's just, and they were always playing at a level where they were so close to winning against European teams, but they fell short very, very often. Now, at the 2018 Boston Major, they started off the Challenger stage 0-2, which means if they lost one more match, they would lose and they would be out. In the Challenger stage, they won 3 consecutive wins to keep their streak alive. In the new Legend stage, they barely managed to slip out of the group and made the top 8, and they played 3 of the best teams in the world to make the finals. They played SK Gaming, G2 Esports, and FaZe Clan. In the finals against FaZe Clan, they were assumed to be the underdogs in this matchup. Everyone thought that FaZe's super team would win, and if Cloud9 won this major, they would be the first North American team ever to win a major CSGO tournament. And as you would expect, Cloud9 was the champion of this tournament, and they proved themselves, and they proved the North American scene, and they made history on that night when they beat FaZe Clan in a double overtime 2-1 match victory. Now, they've been struggling with their roster ever since that win. Their best players have retired. Stewie2K, arguably the most important player for Cloud9's history, left the team to go play in Brazil with SK Gaming and join their super team. Skedoodle, who I've mentioned before, was their best sniper, decided to retire from competitive Counter-Strike as he decided that he was not a competitive person, and he left the team in order to pursue his dream of becoming a streamer and just to play some casual games on Twitch, a streaming platform. Tarek, their in-game leader, left with Stewie, and they joined the Brazilian super team, which became very, very successful eventually. And their roster, Cloud9's roster, was starting to falter. They lost some of the talents that they very, very highly needed. And now they only had 2 out of the 5 players who won the Boston Major on their team. and they had to find some new recruits. And they went to Europe to find new recruits. They went to the CIS region, which is Russia, Kazakhstan. They went to the Asian region, and they eventually found players that they thought they would fit, that would fit into their roster. However, this was yet to be the case. Thing is, though, when they found their new players, they realized that they couldn't work together, and their mechanical skill as a group was not high enough, and they fell out of the top teams in the world. And they are not even the number one North American team anymore. And it's quite a revolting happening to see someone who was at the top of their game fall all the way down to the bottom in the wretches. And it's a very interesting story, and I feel like teams nowadays can learn that they need to make sure the number one priority in their teams are the players, and their interests always need to be kept in mind if the team wants to succeed. If the player wants money, more money from the team in their contract, if they want better living conditions, if they want to do less sponsorships, the team must keep in mind that these players can walk out of them on any time possible, and need to make sure that their players are satisfied with their situation. And if this can happen with any super team, with any teamwork team, with any team, then they will succeed in the long run, and the teams will last longer and become better, and will not fall to the bottom as Cloud9 did. Now, that about covers it for today, and we have covered some of the most burning topics in Counter-Strike's history, and some of the most interesting plateaus and the most interesting runs to success. Now, to review, we have covered today what the CSGO professional competitive scene is and how it works. The Ninjas in Pajamas 87 wins, 0 losses run, which is the most consecutive wins to ever be recorded. The iBuyPower match fixing scandal and how it impacted anti-cheat and fair and integral play in the professional scene. The rise and fall of the French CSGO scene from the most decorated country of prodigious players to the ashes of a burnt-out fire. Astralis' double major and number one reign in 2018 and their impact on teamwork and coordination. FaZe's five superstar super team and how it failed. And the rise and fall of Cloud9 for the first North American team to win a major tournament to the middle of the pack of MS players. I thank you for tuning in to this episode, and that will wrap it up for today.